number two, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday. Having fun. Week of Thanksgiving. We say hello now to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach of the Innsworth Tigers. Tim, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. Before we get into today's current topics, I want to ask your opinion, because Joe and I were just talking about this. I guess the Hall of Fame, is it semifinalists that we're at now?
Yes, that
have come out. And Jason Witten is one of those guys. I feel, Joe feels, Witten should be a lock to be in the Hall of Fame. Now, whether he's first ballot or not, I don't know. I think he's a Hall of Famer. We've had a few people argue with us that he is not. Looking at a lot of his numbers compared to guys like Antonio Gates, Tony Gonzalez, I think he's second in receptions and receiving yards amongst tight ends all time. He's a Hall of Famer in my mind. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. I mean, no-brainer. When you mention Gonzalez and Gates, like, those guys are no-brainers. I mean, in terms of how long they played, in terms of the production, like, to me, I don't even – you know, I think some guys, you know, there's a little bit of a debate because it's like, wow, look, it's rarefied air. It's hard to get in and all that stuff. Jason Witten, in terms of how long he did it and the level and the production and the fact, too, like, you know, in some of these for tight ends, obviously, you know, Gonzalez and Gates were really primarily receiving tight ends. You know, Jason Witten was – in comparison to the three of those guys, he was much more a, you know, all aspects of playing tight end.
How do you think they handle quarterbacks with Rivers, Eli, and Drew Brees all being up for it this year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you don't let Brees in the first go. I mean, just in terms of Super Bowl wins, stats, again, longevity, those types of things. I don't know how Brees doesn't make it right away. Rivers, because he never won a Super Bowl, would probably be the easiest one to, you know, have on the outside looking in, especially when you consider, you know, there's not a ton of people that have ever played the game that have multiple Super Bowl rings as a quarterback, you know, which, you know, certainly gives Eli's, you know, case a lot of strength. I could see Eli not getting in on, you know, the first go round, you know, just because of, you know, probably sheer, you know, numbers and production and things like that. I do think eventually he will be in, but I guess, to make it longer than it needed to be, I would rank them, you know, Brees, Eli, then Philip Rivers.
You've been on football because of your wonderful father and the career he had. Who was your favorite player growing up?
You know, my favorite player growing up was, it kind of varied. But, you know, for a while it was Mark Bavaro, because I think I maybe told you guys in the past, like, at the end of my dad's career, Mark Bavaro was drafted by the Giants. And really my dad was kept around by Parcells to be a mentor to Mark, and Mark actually lived with us, you know, his rookie year. And, you know, we were old enough because, you know, my parents had us, you know, early enough in my dad's playing career that, you know, Matthew was in middle school. You know, I mean, I think I was probably, I don't know, at least 10 years old when my dad was playing for the Giants. So we were old enough to have a sense of what was going on. So we loved Mark Bavaro. And then, you know, I think as we started, you know, playing quarterback, it was, at least for me in that time, it was hard not to become a big John Elway fan.
Oh, I absolutely. Also, your dad played with one of my favorite players of all time, Russ Francis, who I think one of the greatest tight ends. He's not going to get mentioned, like, you know, in the pantheons of the Wittens and everybody else's. But, I mean, those guys, Tim, back there were just larger than life. And it was really cool to watch all these guys play and everything like that. It was just, I mean, football is still a special thing, but being around those guys like you were, I mean, it's like, did you ever pinch yourself, like, when you look back now, like, holy cow, that was really cool?
You know, it definitely is cool, as, you know, the older we get and realize the special opportunity it was. But as a kid, you don't know anything different. Look, when my dad, you mentioned Russ Francis, you know, my dad always spoke really highly of Russ Francis, just his ability and things like that. And so he was with him in New England. He was with Todd Christensen at the Raiders. Ooh. And he was with Steve Jordan at the Vikings. And he was with Mark Bavaro at the Giants. And, you know, those are just the tight ends, never mind the, you know, the quarterbacks. And, I think it's something now. Look, we're getting ready to play Baylor, and, you know, Archie Manning sends me a text message, you know, ahead of the game, obviously with his family connection to Baylor now. And so I think I look at, you know, kind of how we grew up, what we were connected to. You know, I always joke it was, you know, it was Mr. Grogan, not Steve Grogan, right? And that's just kind of how, you know, how we grew up, and, you know, definitely thankful for it.
I always wanted you to wear a neck roll like Steve Grogan wore, if you could go back in time.
I think he chewed nails. He was so tough. But you know, I kind of laugh about it a little bit, because, like, even with my own kids, you know, I'd just be like, you know, when, you know, like Tannehill's in town, and it's just like, all right, like, so does we need to teach them, like, just like we would if you saw you, it would be like Mr. Dubin. It'd be like, well, this is Mr. Tannehill. This isn't Ryan. So, right. You know, Ben Jones has kind of ruined that, just because he's just become Coach Ben for us at Ensworth.
Yeah.
I think really you don't think anything of it until you look, you know, you're, I guess, old and bald, and you're like, that was pretty cool.
Every day. Chase and I, Tim, had a great discussion yesterday about Cam Ward. We're sold on him. After what we saw Sunday when he had no help and just kept that football team in the game, we want to get your thoughts about his performance Sunday, because he had no time to throw. He was running for his life, and he was making plays. And I just think that's a warrior, and that's the kind of guy I want leading my football team.
Wait a second. So – we just needed one game to be sold. That's all we needed.
it's a collection.
Yeah,
I think my thing, and we've talked to you about this, is it's not as much about the wins and the losses. It's is he getting better, and are the young guys that you've brought in to build with him getting better? And Sunday, to me, even in a loss, was an example of the answer to that is yes.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, you know, the numbers on the day were, you know, respectable. And I think everybody knows that, you know, he's doing it with, you know, not guys that would you just take around the league and would be starter at all of those other places. I do think there was, you know, against a good defense, you know, I think there was a competitiveness and a and then certainly the ability stuff that you could feel encouraged by. So I agree with you guys on that. Now, look, there's still some of the stuff that we talked about last week where it's like, okay, here comes a little sidearm throw, ball's batted down. You know, here's, you know, an unnecessary, you know, in terms of holding on to the football or like taking a hit unnecessarily or those things like that, you know, I can't say that I came away being like, oh, that was a perfect game, but I think it was good, and I think there was definitely promise. I still feel like, and it's really unfortunate that this is the case, much like Trevor Lawrence's rookie year was just a complete, like, reboot, start over in year two, I really feel like that's going to be the case for Cam Ward. And I think the thing that you maybe hope for is that, you know, when you think about Brian Callahan's tree, you think about, you know, maybe where the next coach could come from, something being similarly aligned in terms of terminology or something like that would probably be helpful to a young quarterback.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. We will have more with him coming up next. Chase and Big Joe on this Tuesday, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday, continuing with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joining us now on the program. Look, we kind of talked about teams and their playoff chances yesterday. Dallas had an exciting win, a come-from-behind win on Sunday against the Eagles. I think it's too little too late for the Cowboys, barring any kind of big help. But what do you think?
I think you're probably right sitting there at
5-5, and I guess, you know, they got the tie too. You know, one thing I never really have a grasp on is like how helpful that tie is as you get late in the year. I just say that, like, I forget who it was a few years back. It might have been Philadelphia, you know, when McNabb didn't know that you could end games in ties. But, like, where, you know, those things end up helping. I do think one of the things that's interesting about them in general is that they've gotten better defensively. And, you know, I think when you look at them defensively, like, if they can hang in there and give them a chance – they can be really good on offense just because, like, just take this past weekend. CeeDee Lamb played terribly, but it didn't matter because they do have balance in terms of being able to run the football. George Pickens is a monster right now. And so, you know, I think that that's what's interesting. And, you know, I'm sitting here just looking at their remaining schedule. So do we think that 9 wins with a tie would be enough?
I mean, it depends on what everybody else does. I mean, you got Green Bay, Detroit, and then Chicago. I mean, whoever takes that division.
Yeah,
and then...
I do think the Week 18 game between Chicago and Detroit will likely determine the division. And to your point about Green Bay, like, they've got a tie also.
Yeah.
Right? I have that if I'm
Well, like, the West is probably getting 3 teams in, right?
Yeah, I mean, potentially, but, like, let's play this out for a second, okay? Just looking at their schedule. Week 18, the Giants. Like, Dallas should win that game.
Yep.
They got the Commanders week 17. That's a game they should win.
So 7-5
and the Chargers, who can't block anybody. They've got the Vikings, you know, and they have 2 games coming up where it's, you know, Kansas City and Detroit, you know, both, you know, 2, you know, difficult games. But, like, they could lose their next 2, win their next 4, and maybe be in. And so I'm not ready to write them off yet, I guess, is the long and short of that, because I do think that as we sit here kind of at this point, you know, going into whatever this is, week 12, week 13, that you look at it and you go, okay, well, like, wow, look at them. Just take the Bears for the example. You brought them up. Their schedule is not easy going forward. You know how many teams they've beaten with a winning record?
One.
And you know who it was? It was this weekend against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, wow.
Who was their starting quarterback?
Yeah, Mason Rudolph.
That's the only team with a winning record that they have beaten. So when they have a hard schedule down the stretch, which they do, you know, and then you look at it and you go, well, wait a second, like, where are they going to end up? Now, they've got so many wins now, like, they're sitting there at 8 wins now that they're probably good. But just hear this out. Philadelphia, Green Bay, then a Cleveland Browns who, you know, have a really good defense. Green Bay again, San Francisco 49ers, Detroit Lions. What if they only win one more game?
That's a good point.
That's a brutal schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. And that could certainly factor in. I mean, look, that's why you got to play the games. And the NFC, I think, is pretty intriguing right now because things are so jumbled up that, you know, we're still not quite sure, you know, how it's going to play out. I think if you look at the AFC, I mean, but how concerned should Buffalo fans be right now?
Yeah, I think Buffalo needs. Well, Buffalo's not going to win the division because of, you know, the already head to head and the you know, the team that's got to be more concerned than them is obviously Kansas City, and I think you can kind of point to those teams because of what the expectations are. Like, at least with Baltimore and kind of the scenario that they found themselves in, you know, they can very easily win their division. You know, they're going to at least have, you know, one home game if that happens. You know, Kansas City and Buffalo, the expectation is not, hey, you're playing on wild card weekend, and by the way, you're doing that on the road. Like, that has never been, you know, the standard of what they expect. And look, just take Kansas City as this example. Okay. So, They lose Trey Smith in the game to an ankle, so we don't really know what his health is. Rashee Rice looked like he pulled his hamstring in the game this weekend. So while they won and, you know, they're hanging in there, and they are a team that I could see getting to 9-10 wins because of what their remaining schedule looks like. Are you healthy or are you just so banged up? And then you get in the postseason, are you so banged up? So that's the – look, I'm not writing them off because they're Kansas City. But, yeah, it's a much different path, just like it will be for Buffalo to, you know, not be playing in Buffalo and being on the road.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck on the Chasing Big Joe Show. Tim, in your great your analysis, who is the best pure passer in the National Football League?
Right now?
Yes, sir.
Matthew Stafford.
That's who I thought he was going to say. I think that's a good answer.
And I'm going to ask why, but I know why.
Yeah, he sees it so well. You know, part of it is the experience. I think part of it is also like still where he is physically. You know, a guy that would be high on the list would be Jared Goff. You know, those would be guys that I would have, you know, very high on the list. I do think that when you look at guys like Allen or Mahomes, guys like that, I think their game is a little bit different. Not to say that they're not amazing passers. They are. But, you know, there's so many different elements to their game that people have to defend that changes things in terms of, you know, what you – like, no one's spying Jared Goff, I guess, is, you know, kind of where I'm going with that. No one's spying Matthew Stafford. A lot of times people are like, look, we're playing coverage, man. Like, that's what we're doing, which is why it's important for those guys to be on teams that do have some balance to run the football. But their ability, when you know you are going to be passing the football, to still be able to do it at a high level is really impressive.
Your thoughts on Bryce Young? I thought last night, when he's got a little bit of time, he throws a great pass. I mean, and they're right on. I know the interception late in the game where they held the receiver, which is not really his fault. But, yeah. I mean, he just – 2 years ago, everybody's like, this guy's the worst number one pick of all time. And now watching him now play, it's fun. It's exciting. And I think he's going to develop into a really good quarterback. But you know more about that than I do.
Yeah. I mean, I think that he can definitely play at a starter level. Like, I don't – like, I would agree with that. You know, I do think that – and some of this is his size – strength and things like that, I think they'll always be like, he'll always be a tier down from, you know, some other guys a little bit the way that Tua, you know, is viewed little bit the way that, you know, Kirk Cousins was probably viewed for a long time. I think that he probably, you know, finds himself in that, you know, in that area. And so does that mean, you know, he's not a starter or can't play at a starter level or anything? Like, no, it doesn't mean that. But I do think, like, for it to go well, I think that it'll have to be really, really around him. And look, it's not a knock. You know, I think you could say that for a lot of quarterbacks that I think are really good players, but that's definitely how I would kind of assess where he is. He's certainly not a bust, and he's certainly not, you know, somebody that you're like, hey, we can't win with this guy. If you had to redraft things over, would he be the first overall pick? Like, I still don't think that he would be.
He is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us every week. Tim, happy Thanksgiving to you and the family. We always appreciate you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Happy Thanksgiving to you guys as well. See ya.
See ya. Tim Hasselbeck joining us on the program. Coming up next, one of our buddies, Jeff Jarrett, AEW superstar, Nashville or Hendersonville's very own, is going to join us in studio. AEW will be at the Pinnacle tomorrow night. We'll have your chance to win tickets to that, and also we'll talk to Double J coming up next. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, the game. You'll hear this music tomorrow night at the Pinnacle. Double J, Jeff Jarrett, our favorite, our own, we claim him. Well, he's born and raised here, so of course we claim him. AEW Dynamite, Tomorrow at Pinnacle, we'll have some tickets to give away. What's up, Jeff? Good to see you again.
How we doing, guys?
We're fantastic.
Doing all right? I got to just kind of tell a little story. I waited until we got on the air. You know when we did that? That was when tickets went on sale for this event, right?
Yep.
Our socials, I had all kind of, yes, Joe, even you, got pleasant feedback. No, I did. I really did. Like, hey, man, you were on. We heard you on. It was good. It was really good feedback. So I appreciate you guys having me on back then. And today, and the event is finally here at the Pinnacle. Have you guys been in the Pinnacle?
Yes, we have.
It's awesome.
So I'm the odd one out here. I have not. And it's our first ever first ever professional wrestling show in the Pinnacle.
So it's going to have, how can I describe this that you would get it? It's small. It's intimate.
I've heard that. It's a
music almost. This is probably a stretch, but this is just the best example I can come up with.
Yeah.
A little bit ECW arena vibes, like kind of that intimate. Maybe what's where the first Raw was in Manhattan?
Manhattan Center.
Kind of like that. Like it's smaller.
I love that.
You're like it's gonna look awesome on TV.
I can't wait. And we're doing Dynamite and Collision, so
yeah.
Come on out. But those can turn into, you're doing 4 hours of television wrestling, so two live, two plus two. So it can be a journey, I'll say that.
Yep.
But the who's going to be here. Continental Classic kicks off, stars from around the globe. But I'm excited. It doesn't happen very often. A guy like myself get to do a first. So, you know, I was in the last match in the old Boston Garden. So now I get to be in the first wrestling event in the Pinnacle. Yeah.
That'll be fun. Who are you lacing him up against tomorrow?
TBD.
Okay,
who
TBD.
Knows? Are you kidding me? It's AEW. We won't know.
You never know.
You ain't kidding, which is a good thing.
Is it weird it being your hometown, this big event? I mean, you've done it times and times again, but it's your hometown, man.
It is. I kind of go back to, I've wrestled here. My second match of my career is at the old sports arena. So for 7 years, I was here every Saturday night. But then, you know, when you go national and in the 8 days of Raw and Nitro, when we would do those shows here,
right?
The comp requests come blowing in, and friends upon friends upon friends, and then through the years, and obviously we did the 2.5 years of TNA at the Asylum, but you know, getting to perform in a hometown, it is. There's nothing like it, so it's very, very cool. Got some special guests coming out, but it's always special. It is, and that's why for me, I'm excited to get inside that Pinnacle and just kind of see the layout, because you know, for years, whether it's Bridgestone or Municipal Auditorium, whatever it may be, it's gonna be cool.
Yeah, it's cool. And Paul McCartney just played there a few weeks ago. Paul McCartney and on you.
Eric Church, Paul McCartney, and other opening acts have been in that place, and now they're going to get a main event, right?
There it is. I love it. Let me ask you this. My son's going tomorrow night, and all of his buddies are going.
Love it.
They can't name 3 NFL players. And I told Chase this, but they can name 78 wrestlers. I mean, this sport keeps getting bigger. When you think it can't get any bigger, this whole generation loves you and loves what's going on, man.
You know, Joe, our friend, or I'll call our friend, Mr. Oregon, he just did a feature on me.
Right.
And that was, it's funny, I don't know if y'all compared notes. That's one of the things, he just kind of said, what is about? And, you know, I think the most simplest terms are, there's a couple of different factors. We don't have seasons, 52 weeks a year. That is one thing. Another thing is, you know, I've been in, for better or worse, I've been in people's homes for 40 years. So other guys, but you know, when, you know, I'm not wearing a helmet like a Tom Brady, or you know, seasonal like basketball, but you know, we appeal to the masses, and we have, you know, we literally are extension, so quote unquote, playing an extension of our own personality, but we're there. People, they feel like they know us. Like people right now feel like they know Joe and Chase when they listen to you day after day after day.
Sure.
In the car. Well, put that on television and then put that on a stage like a wrestling ring and taking a chair or taking a guitar, just the excitement, all that. But it is, you know, wrestling, like you just said, it's on, just think about it. We're on HBO Max. All of our content at AEW you can see on HBO Max.
Crazy.
The other guys, ESPN, Netflix, Peacock. I joked, I think, with you last time, and I don't want to get political here, but, you know, and don't take this wrong way out there, folks, but our current president is in the same Hall of Fame that I am.
Yeah, that's true.
And I say that with, that is kind of where,
right.
I watched Monday Night Football last night. I think there were 2 or 3 professional wrestling references. When you watch a politician now, or you watch a post game interview, or a celebration of a touchdown, whatever it may be, there's some showmanship. And as I tell my wife, and she gets frustrated, I said, "Honey, it all circles back to professional wrestling."
Yeah, it does.
It's that simple.
Well, it's funny. Even today, at 38 years old, if we're doing an event or something, I pick up a microphone and I feel like a promo is about to come out. And like, I've been cutting promos since I was 6 years old.
Yeah,
you know, watching you and saying things that would get me in trouble.
That's right.
I'll never forget. We did an interview one time where we had Shawn Michaels call in. And I was so excited about it because I introed it and I said, "The man that got a sixth grader Chase McCabe in trouble for doing a crotch chop." Yes. And he busted out laughing. He was like, "Sorry about that."
That's but, it.
You know, that's what
that,
it is.
That is. And, you know, you just mentioned kind of walkout music. Now, yep. You know, that's just a part of, you know, you go to a Preds game, man, the energy that comes with the music and the hype up music, and you'll hear, you know, wrestling themes there. Same with the baseball game or football. Just the theatrics and the entertainment aspect of all major sporting events now. To me, they're you know, pyro and music, they're all taking kind of a page out of wrestling.
When did the entrance music thing really start? Because was that WWF that did that, or was it the?
Well, I mean, my dad started doing music videos to action back in the early 80s. But, you know, in the late 70s is where it went from, you know, match to entrance music. And gosh, I don't know how many times I would get to an arena through the years when I first starting out. Here's my cassette tech. People don't even know what a cassette is. But you have the boom box and the cassette, throw your cassette in, and the ring announcer would hold the mic down to the boom box, let it play, then you only have one feed. So the music cuts, and then you do the introduction. So,
who's your favorite wrestler of all time when you're growing up?
Oh, God. I say this. It's an easy one for me. Jerry the King Lawler. I think he is nice. His talent level is through the roof. In so many ways, there's nothing he couldn't do. But I liked him. But I think if you want to go back even further, the one that I was mesmerized, and I think in a lot of ways, yeah, I'm from the it's a family business, but watching Jackie Fargo,
yes!
and kind mm-hmm. of understanding at an early age, all right, this guy, you know, strutting and making fun of the bad guys and all that.
The hair.
Just full of entertainment. But I learned later, but about year two, I got in the business. He used to call people Pally, but he called me kid, come here. I'm going to teach you something. He said, one of the tricks of this business is get them laughing, get them crying. And if you can do the first two, you're going to get them mad when they're beating you up. It's kind of a rhythm. Tell your kid that.
Yeah.
Get them laughing, get them crying, and then you'll get them angry.
Get them angry.
So is your strut kind of a derivative of the Fargo strut?
It's 100%. Contrary to what Ric Flair may or may not say, but I always give him a hard time. I said, "Rick, you can't come close to strutting as good as Jackie Fargo."
So yeah.
He didn't ever like
that. Well, because his was kind of Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, yes. Right?
Yeah, definitely.
There are no new ideas. There are just new ways to do them.
In a lot of ways, look, I don't think Fargo created it, but you know, there are legendary stories of Fargo up in New York and Madison Square Garden going on TV in those days and taking a cigar out and then literally taking a $100 bill out, lighting the $100 bill on air, and then lighting his cigar with the burning, and it was the mystique and the persona. Those stories, I still like. Man, that guy had BASSs.
My dad loved him.
Yeah.
So when I was a kid and was getting into wrestling, and so we were watching and everything, there was one night I'm in the living room and I was doing more your strut than Flair's. Yeah. Like, and he goes, "Who is that?" And I was like, "It's Jeff Jarrett." And he goes, "No, it's not. That's Jackie Fargo."
He started
doing the Fargo strut.
That's right.
And then telling me stories about going with his little brother to the Hippodrome.
Yep.
And watching Jackie Fargo, Tojo Yamamoto. There was some manager that had a cane.
Dr. Ken Ramey. Oh, no, Saul Weingroff.
Saul Weingroff. And one time it was Tojo or somebody broke the cane and threw it under the ring.
But to the point that Joe said earlier, you know, somebody can vividly remember that.
Yeah.
You know, guys like us that talk sports, we remember I'll be topical, the Music City Miracle,
sure.
or Ray Allen hitting the corner three, all the different kind of sports moments. But wrestling, like I said, doesn't have seasons, and there are always those moments, and it's a three-generation. Grandmas and grandpas can watch wrestling with their grandkids, but they remember iconic moments that may not be iconic in the sports world, but certainly iconic in professional wrestling.
Jeff Jarrett is with us. AEW Dynamite and Collision will be at the Pinnacle tomorrow night. We're going to give away a four-pack of tickets.
AEWTix.com.
AEWTix.com. T-I-X. But we're going to give away a four-pack of tickets
right now.
Get out
of here.
Yeah, we're doing it right now.
I'm not buying that. I guarantee you're putting them in your back pocket, Chase. I've known you. I know the school you went. No, I'm kidding.
I already got them. Don't worry. I'm good. I'm good to go. Caller number. Give me a number. What's your favorite number?
Four.
Caller number four, 615-737-1025. We'll hook you up with a four-pack of tickets to Dynamite and Collision tomorrow at the Pinnacle. We'll have more with Double J, Jeff Jarrett coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 1025 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 1025 The Game here on this Tuesday. AEW Dynamite and Collision tomorrow at the Pinnacle. AEWTix.com is how you can get your tickets and go hang out there. You'll see our guest who's in studio, Double J, Jeff Jarrett, and many, many others. I like. Do you like, because you did this in WCW, did this in TNA, you tape a couple of different shows at one time, like Dynamite and Collision, and then you kind of got the week done.
It is a grind. I will say this, that some of the times the unsung heroes of a professional wrestling outfit are the production folks. But, you know, like you said, we're going to go live around the world, TBS, obviously, across coast to coast here, but HBO Max is global for 2 hours. And then as soon as that show is over, we crank right up and going to go 2 hours of Collision. And so that is a for the audience, I mean, it's in a lot of ways, you're getting two shows for the price of one, which is these days a real treat. But yeah, it does make it the holiday. You know, the kids don't have to get up and go to school to Thursday morning, so it works out. There's all kind of new challenges that come with that. But you know, as deep as our roster is, you know, I've been on many shows. When you do that many tapings, guys have to work two or three times. That isn't the case tomorrow. Our roster's so deep. Continental Classic's going on. So it'll be 4 hours of incredible action.
How cool is it for you that have been in this business your whole life that you're still getting to work with, you know, like Paul White shows up the other night at Full Gear, the Giant, Big Show. You know, you've worked with him in, what, four different companies at this point? You know, Sting, who's been around, like still shows up. Chris Jericho. I mean, you see guys like yourself that have stood the test of time. And then you get to work with Orange Cassidy, MJF, these young guys that are the what's next for the business.
I don't take it for granted. I will definitely say that. You know, the thing that you know, Jay Lethal, my tag partner, and Sanjay Dutt, and obviously my wife Karen, and Satnam Singh, you know, our group. But there are others. The thing that is kind of cool is, you know, my music hits, and there's a rise because people have heard that music for a while. But, yeah, when you're facing, I'll call it the next generation or the current generation, I don't lose sight of that. It's one of the reasons, or maybe the top reason, I stay in the gym every day. I want to be – I owe it to this business. God has really blessed me with some just great health and good physical and a mindset to keep on keeping on. So I have learned at an early age that and my grandmother used to say that, young man, those folks put groceries on our table. So the wrestling business has put groceries on the Jarrett's table for since 1946. I don't lose sight of that. I really don't. I'm very appreciative of it.
What's the oddest place you've ever wrestled?
Oh, man. Jerusalem on Easter Sunday.
Really?
94. That was kind of odd. I could give you some small little venues. Small wrestling school in, gosh, what is the name of Aberdeen, Scotland? Small venue. That was cold and damp. I had food poisoning the night before, but I got to the ring. There's all, you know, Mexico. There you go, Joe. If I sit here and digest enough, I'm doing a live podcast at 5 o'clock today. So me and Conrad, I feel like you channeled your inner Conrad over to me today, Otis, because down in Mexico, I have, man, I wish Karen was in studio right now to get her to comment on it. Honey, we're going, and you have to have kind of extra security to get in the building, and then all of a sudden they just pull around, and there's a huge tent outside of the arena, stadium, whatever it may be, and you're dressing inside that tent, and you're expecting, okay, and then you go in there, and dirt floors, and it rains. Yeah, those are some tough ones.
All right, what's the coolest place you've been recognized?
I don't know. I'll tell you what. Here's a I don't know. It still sticks in this day. We were with a group of guys. I was touring Australia, and I was on Bondi Beach. Have you ever been to Bondi Beach or seen pictures of Bondi Beach?
I've only been to National Shores.
Okay, there you go. Bondi Beach, enemy. It's like hundreds or thousands of people. Both ways. It's just a huge area. It's in Sydney. It's a lot, just very, very populated beach. And we're navigating our way through there. And we had to meet a guy, and we kind of took a wrong turn of a wrong turn. And all of a sudden, okay, we're in the middle of everybody, and we're going through. And this guy selling adult beverages is going through, and he's screaming out, you know, whatever he was selling, and this and this and this. And he just said, "Hey, Double J," as if we were all long lost friends. And I was just like, what? And I had sunglasses on, and my hair was all slicked back. Anyway, it was funny. You had to be there, but Bondi Beach was not even close to a wrestling ring.
I'd like to see your passport. I mean, is it just...
Boy, those things, I've gone through a few of those. Yes. It's got some stickers in it.
And that's the cool part of the business, is it takes you all over the world, because it's a global sport.
It is. And that is, you know... India is you know, wrestling in Pune, India, those kind of places are cool. You know, Europe is very, you know, all kinds of interesting folks there. But when you get in the outskirts, you know, go to Tokyo, but get on the outskirts, see the culture and the hotels. And so I kid you not, I've stayed in many a hotel room in Japan where when you stand up in the room, You see how tall I am. I'm not real tall, but I can touch one wall and touch the other wall without moving my feet. So, all over the world, it's pretty cool that you know passports are, they're no longer, we're getting out of that. Everything's facial recognition and no stamps, and those are a thing of the past.
Yeah, where's one place you'd like to wrestle that you never have?
You know, I think that one of the last frontiers is going to be South America. Brazil, the population there is through the roof. Years ago, Argentina, Colombia still has some shows, Chile. I think South America, and I've never played ball down there, took tours to play basketball down there, but I've never wrestled there. I'd like to give that a shot. Don't know if that's going to happen, but that would be a pretty cool place.
Did you ever do one of the Saudi tours when you were with WWE?
I did not. As a wrestler or a producer?
Either.
Yeah, produced. I went over there, yeah, twice. That's a long air ride, I can tell you.
What was it about? I used to laugh because I felt like when they first started going over there, it was like, we're booking Goldberg versus Hogan. We were going back to the 90s.
That's what they wanted
to see, like that, which was great, which it was nostalgic. It was fun, but I was like, I mean, what about some of these new guys?
Yeah, no, that was a cultural thing. And look, you know, they are the buyers of the show, so you got to please the promoters. I know, I love, there's all kinds of stories that float around, but one was that they requested that they wanted Yokozuna to wrestle, they had to let them know, if you can get Yokozuna here, we will. He had been passed away about 10 years or 20 years, but unique places, that's always a good water cooler talk, because that's the one thing, you know, music translates, but it's also language and all that. Professional wrestling, it translates into every culture, and that is something that I think is why it's lasted and continued to rise, because our world is, you know, we're instantly connected more and more and more and more. It's no longer, you know, this country and that country. We're all connected one way or another, and I think wrestling is kind of a universal, if you will, form of entertainment.
Oh, sure. Like, what's your day tomorrow like? You're wrestling at the Pinnacle tomorrow night, but what's your routine tomorrow?
Oh, well, wake up, quiet time with the Lord, eat my same breakfast and protein shake, go to the gym. I'll go to the gym tomorrow to at least get a little exercise, come home, aggravate Karen for about 30 minutes. No, then get ready, go down to the building, and then we have all, you know, production days. There's, you know, we have the VIP meet and greets. There's shop AEW commercials. Running a, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, you guys come into the studio 5 days a week. We really get to our quote-unquote office one day a week or collision another day a week. So when you get on set for production days, it can really – it's that's one of the things that, you know, obviously we're in Nashville, got Music Friends. When Music Friends come out and really operate and see what we do, because those guys will go out on tour, and whether it's 20 dates or 50 dates or whatever it may be, there's a start, ending, and end. You know, start, middle, and end. Wrestling is 52 weeks a year. So it's a grind, but it's also the way things are operated. It is a never-ending churn of creating content. Again, that content is king, and that's what professional wrestling, when you really drill it down, I mean really drill it down, that's why wrestling is so successful. We can create content, unlimited content, relatively inexpensive in today's world.
I'm disappointed that these bands on Broadway don't perform With My Baby Tonight, but we'll get them on that.
I can assure you this. Back in the day, I've had them perform With My Baby Tonight. And those good musicians, you let them hear it one time and it's amazing.
It's so
they've
good.
Done it. Matter of fact, at this, no, I won't tell that story.
To leave off the air. To leave on this, we were kind of talking about this off the air. The business is, as it always does, is kind of going through a transition because who's the next guy? Like, you have guys and girls, but then you have like that upper echelon that only so many people can say that they have been in.
Yep.
Cena's retiring in WWE. So now the opportunity is there, and it's usually a guy that transcends companies. It doesn't matter what company. It's just, you know, that they're The Rock, Stone Cold, Hulk Hogan, whatever. How exciting is it now, if you're a wrestling fan, to kind of be a part of that process of seeing who that next person
Buddy,
is going to be?
I think not just a wrestling fan. Inside the business, it is – I've said it over and over and over. If you listen to my podcast, come to one of my wrestling seminars, young guys come up, guys in my age bracket, we'll have conversations. Who is really going to grab it? When you look back on things, Hulk Hogan wrestled Japan and territories. He did some things that, if you really know his story, where he really grabbed the bull by the horn, so to speak. You have to give Stone Cold in that mantra. There's certain guys. Cena obviously did it. Back in the day, Sting. We could go through different names. To me, I'm watching, as a fan, who's the talent that's going to grab it? Like, truly grab this and saying, it's mine, now try to take it away from me. Even if they haven't reached that, they got to believe it before it manifests. I'm going to go off into a tangent. I'm craving that guy. I don't see it.
Yeah,
I'm waiting to see it, but it will happen. It's the nature of the business. There's a vacuum. You know, Sting retired a couple of years ago. God rest his soul. Hogan passed away. You know, when you just kind of see the void in the wrestling entertainment side of things, there is definitely a vacuum being created. Who's going to fill it? Who's going to grab it? I can't wait.
It's going to be fun. It's always good to see you. We're excited about tomorrow night. I know you're going to enjoy it. AEW Ticks with a X.com. AEW Ticks to the Pinnacle, and it's a Dynamite Collision. Going to be a fun night.
Right on, guys. As always, love you guys. Appreciate being on the air. See you again. AEW Ticks, TIX.com. As Freddie Miller used to say, be there.
Absolutely. He's Double J, Jeff Jarrett. We will come back with much more. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.